You know what? It's been a long week. We heard about gun violence research at the CDC. We revisited a conversation with author Alice Walker and learned about some of the unsung female heroes of the civil rights movement. So, as we do every Friday, we have gathered a group of smart people to help us kick back, unwind, and think about what the heck happened this week. It's time for the break room.
Professional wrestling, even on a local level, is built on manufactured drama and conflict. Well, that took one fan to a bad place.
We are going to make America great again.
But he's also making dating great again.
Mr. Noir, this is Buddy Patterson down in Atlanta.
Right.
I'm calling about, well, a tragedy that's taking place in our city. And I refer to the Atlanta Braves!
Today in the break room, we have Amy Condon. She's an editor with Savannah Magazine. Also, environmental blogger Ken Edelstein is back in the break room. It's good to see you again after so long.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Sumaya Khalifa oversees the Islamic Speakers Bureau of Atlanta, and Sam Burnham is with the blog All the Biscuits in Georgia. Welcome to everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The National Cathedral in Washington, D.C. says it will remove the Confederate battle flags that are now part of its famous stained glass windows. Those windows memorialize Robert E. Lee and Stonewall Jackson. There are other symbols of the Confederacy on the windows, and those will remain, at least for the time being. The National Cathedral says it will revisit those images later. For now, though, the cathedral wants to use the removal of the battle flags as a starting point for a discussion about race and the history of slavery. So what do we think? Is this a good decision?
Yes, it is.
Why?
Well, people go to a cathedral to worship and to be very focused on God and their spirituality. And to have windows that remind us, a lot of Americans, of the dark part of our history, I think that distracts people. So I believe that it is a good thing for them to remove those windows.
That's an interesting point of view. Ken?
Well, I'd also add that, you know, it's the National Cathedral, which kind of has a special place in American faith, at the intersection of American faith and the state, really. Not that, you know, I'm trying to mix state and religion or stuff like that. To have this will be controversial, an anti-American rebellious symbols there and to glorify them.
It'd be controversial, but it's factual.
Wrong. Some people might not say it's anti-American, but I do.
Okay. Sam, you want to jump in?
Of course, I'm going to disagree with Ken on that point. All the Confederate veterans, none of them were ever tried for treason. Samuel Chase, who was the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court at the time, actually worked hard to make sure none of them did because he didn't believe they would ever be convicted of anything because he didn't believe what they had done was wrong. And I read that from documents at the University of Akron and the University of Rice just last night. But also, all Confederate veterans are considered U.S. veterans by the United States Veterans Administration, and their grave sites are all kept up by the VA.
Okay, but let's return to the removal of the battle flag.
The removal of the battle flag, I would say, the battle flags themselves, I don't get that caught up in that. If they want to remove the flags, okay, but I think the conversation that we need to keep in mind is a similar incident in Roanoke, Virginia, at Fifth Avenue Presbyterian Church in Roanoke. There is a stained glass window of Stonewall Jackson in that church that was placed there by the son of slaves who were in the Sunday school class that Thomas Jackson taught for slaves. And they thought enough of him that when they built their church, they wanted to place a memorial for him in there because they saw him not as a punishment, but as a tyrant or a slave owner, but he saw him as a hero that they wanted to revere.
That seems like more a personal story, though. Let me move on. Amy, we've got you.
Can y'all hear me?
Yes. We got about a minute left. Can you tell me what you think about the removal of the battle flag from the National Cathedral?
I think that's okay. I think that's appropriate, that there's a better place for that conversation to take place, not in, it feels more like a museum piece rather than a spiritual piece. But I think the conversation around it does need to happen.
Okay. Well, let's talk about another conversation. There are dating sites for just about everybody. You can find dating sites for farmers, for Christians, geeks even. And now there is a dating site specifically for supporters of this guy.
We have to stop people from pouring into our country. We have to stop it. Until we find out what the hell is going on.
Okay, this is a... that, of course, is a Republican presidential presumptive nominee, Donald Trump. A guy named David Goss saw this as an opportunity because he started a web dating website called TrumpSingles.com. He says that people who are not fans of Donald Trump give Trump supporters a bad name, and therefore it's hard to find dates. What do we think about this? Look, we know that America is polarized. So my question to you guys is, would you date somebody of the opposing political party, whatever that party is?
I would not date Donald Trump. I mean,
I
just
Donald
think
Trump.
He's
We're talking
too
about his
much
supporters.
Into himself, and I just don't think that he would make for nice,
he's
you
married.
Know, bedtime conversation. Well, that hasn't stopped him before.
Oh, boy. Oh, Sumaya, would you date somebody from the opposite political party?
No, not right now.
No.
Because of the polarization that we're experiencing, it's really bad.
Yeah, it is. Amy?
You know, in the past, I've often dated people from the men from the other political parties, but I have to say that if I were in the dating pool right now, it would give me pause because it would really talk about value systems in a much deeper way.
Well, I think that's true. I mean, it's the question of the shared values, but I mean, you know, there's no such thing as a card-carrying Democrat, I think, in Georgia, or you don't have to register to be a Democrat, but I've voted Democrat for quite a while now, and I don't know, I have friends who are Republican, and some of my best friends are Republican, and I mean, but the thing is, the question is, like, how far? Because I think, you know, the whole Trump thing, it's like,
you're separating Trump out from Republican.
Right.
Sam, what about you?
I've actually dated people from the other party when I was in college, before I got married. I sort of separate those personal relationships from political mm-hmm. ideas. Because
it's hard these days, though.
Well, and it can be, but I kind of take that whole Thomas Jefferson approach. I don't let politics and philosophy interfere with my friendships. I have a lot of friends that I disagree with, and we disagree heatedly at times on issues of politics, but when you're dealing with a person, a human being, and you're trying to connect with them on an emotional and personal level, sometimes you got to let some of those other issues go.
That's a question I have for our listeners also. You can let us know if you would have trouble dating somebody from the opposing party. Tweet us at OST Talk. It's Friday. We're in the break room. I'm joined by blogger Sam Burnham of All the Biscuits in Georgia, Sumaya Khalifa of the Islamic Speakers Bureau of Atlanta, environmental blogger Ken Edelstein, and Amy Condon is an editor with Savannah Magazine. And a special thank you, as always, to Savannah Coffee Roasters for donating the coffee that is fueling our break room guests this morning. You can find them online at savannahcoffee.com. Okay, a couple minutes ago, we were talking about Donald Trump. And let's continue that because he's had a kind of a tumultuous relationship with the media during this whole election cycle. He recently banned the Washington Post from covering his campaign, but that is hardly the first media outlet. He previously barred Politico, BuzzFeed, the Huffington Post, and a whole long list, actually, of others. Some people say this is an attack on freedom of the press because he's a candidate for the highest office in the nation. Do you agree? Maybe it is simply his right to bar the outlets he thinks are hostile to him.
Well, I guess one of the questions is, does it work? Will it work? Is it a winning tactic or strategy for his campaign?
I don't think people have a lot of fondness. I mean, the average American doesn't have a lot of fondness for the media, right?
Right, right. But I just don't think this is going to work because, one, you know, there's that old saw about you don't upset people who buy ink by the barrel,
yeah.
Yeah, that.
That's a really old saw. Amy, you're with the media. What do you think?
I think this is wrong because when you're the presumptive nominee for a major political party, you have to act presidential. You have to show how you will be as president. And what he's showing is the things he said prior to actually becoming the presumptive nominee. And he's showing that he will bar anyone who writes about him in an unflattering way, whatever he thinks is unflattering. And so you have to have a thicker skin for this high of an office, and you have to be willing to answer questions. And you can't just I mean, the foundation of a solid democracy, a true democracy, is having also a really strong media. Now, whether the media has done its job is another thing. But just simply
that is
barring them.
Conversation.
Yeah. Simply barring them, you're showing us how you would be as a president.
So, Maya, what do you think?
This is what third world dictators do, not in America. So I'm sorry. I really hate what's going on there.
In terms of barring. Sam?
I'm going to say that he has a right to do this. The problem is we're in the middle of an election, and people are going to judge you and their vote based on how you behave. And if you aren't taking an honest approach and allowing yourself to be open to multiple views of the media, then can we consider this to be a viable candidate? And do we really want to just see Donald Trump in his end this candidacy instead of a press conference, just having a Breitbart reporter over to have supper with him? I mean, that.
You know, nobody's saying that he doesn't have a right to to do this. He has a right to do, you know, whatever he wants to as long as it's legal. But yeah, it's not very presidential, and you know he's just jumping from one disaster to the next. And
exactly.
If you look at the polls over the last 2 weeks, it was sort of looking like it tightened up. Maybe Hillary had a 2 or 3 percentage rose, but now she's like 8% ahead, according to
the
polls.
That could be any number of reasons, though.
Well, any number of Trump's mess ups over the last 2 weeks might be doing it.
And if he keeps doing stuff like this, it's only a matter of time till Gary Johnson comes in and says, you know, vote for
Gary
Donald
Johnson
Trump.
Gary Johnson of the Libertarian Party.
Right.
Yeah.
He says, vote for Donald Trump is a vote for Hillary Clinton, so vote for me. So when does that?
All right. Well, since we're talking about sharing things, let's keep the conversation going on social media. I wonder if you're the parent of a teenager like Sam is, maybe somebody a teen who constantly uses social media?
I posted a pic on Insta and only got like 3 likes. I'm literally dying.
Okay. Research from the University.
Literally dying.
Research from the University of California shows that teens are actually more likely to do dangerous things if they've seen pictures of them that were liked on social media. And some experts now argue maybe we need to restrict social media use as we do with things like driving, voting, smoking, and drinking alcohol. Let me start with you, Sam, because you have your kid with you.
And he's sort of this exception to many of the teenage rules. I've even asked him, do you want social media? He doesn't want to be on there because the only thing he'll do is like YouTube, and he's watching these videos. He's going, these kids are dumb. Why would you risk getting yourself hurt or whatever? And so I think what you have here is we need to be working more as parents, and I'm not taking a bunch of credit for this because it's just the kid's personality on a lot of it, but we need to teach them to be
responsible.
So
not restrict it. Not restrict, just have more parental.
Where does our parental responsibility come in instead of the government having to make a rule telling us how
Well, libertarian, hate rules.
Yeah, but and I wouldn't consider myself a libertarian, but I have to, I mean, how do you regulate something like that? That seems just like a slippery slope where I don't know. You know, you can restrict your kid from doing certain things, I suppose. But for the government to do it,
Sumaya, Amy.
Yeah. Well,
Go ahead,
Amy.
How are we teaching critical thinking and how to make choices that are good for you and not so healthy for you? And if you just keep restricting things and sort of making this sort of safe world, you know, we're not going to have people who know how to think. And so I think those are opportunities for sort of object lessons and teaching moments. But I agree with you have to have a hand in it as a parent to sort of navigate those waters and say, you know, here's appropriate use of it, here's not appropriate use of it.
Well, since we're talking about things that are appropriate and things are not, there's another headline about teenagers and something else they like to do, which is party.
You guys up for a toga party?
Toga! Toga!
Yeah, I think they like the idea, Hoof.
Oh, Otter, please don't do this.
Toga, 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 toga.
Okay, so officers were recently called to a teen house party in Richmond County, Georgia. So get this, there were about 700 people packed in and around a single home. And police officers are now saying, look, take heed. Summer is the season for big teen parties. And I wondered which of you threw a huge teen party when you were in high school or college? And what was the, or if you didn't throw them, what was the biggest party you've ever gone to? So, Amy, we'll start with you.
Okay, I'm trying to remember. I didn't really party until I got to college. So, and I have to say, probably the largest party I went to was a toga party at a frat house.
We're going to need pictures of that, Sam.
I was sort of quiet in high school, but then I went to a party school. I attended a school that's known as a party school, and we did throw a birthday party for one of my roommates. We had a house together in a good-sized yard, and I'm going to guess we probably had closer to 100 rather than 700, but what I thought was the funniest, the only thing I drank that night was coffee, but I drank a whole pot and wound up with the shakes. And then we actually wound up being shut down by the police because the fraternity that was behind us called in a noise complaint because their party got shut down, and they were mad that we were still having ours, so they called the police and we had to shut down.
Ken?
Y'all should have just combined parties.
Right, I know. Sore losers. But, I don't remember throwing any really big parties even in high school or even in college. But after we got out of college, my friend and I lived in Washington, D.C. for a couple of years. And I do remember us standing up and barely standing at the end of it, and Paul and I saying to each other, self-congratulatory, we had just thrown the greatest party in the history of Washington, D.C., and then later waking up.
I feel like that needs confirmation, but
and,
go ahead.
And he was in bed with me, and his girlfriend was looking at us and saying, Paul, what are you doing in Ken's bed?
Okay, we're going to end that story because I feel like it's not going anywhere good.
It didn't go anywhere. Okay. It didn't go anywhere.
Sumaya, your last one that hasn't shared some riotous story.
Well, my story is that in high school I had slumber parties with girls, and the funniest thing that we did was call people late at night, just random numbers.
You prank called people.
Yes, and said...
You're a bad girl.
Well, it was a dare. And we said,
I know,
is your
dares are dangerous.
You said?
We'd say, is your refrigerator running? And they would say yes. And we'll say, well, you better go catch it.
So you called people with dad jokes. That just makes it.
You have Prince Albert in a can.
We are hanging out in the break room with Sumaya Khalifa of the Islamic Speakers Bureau, Sam Burnham of All the Biscuits in Georgia, Ken Edelstein, a blogger, and Amy Condon of Savannah Magazine. Okay. Neil Cassidy, by the way, tweets river bottom parties in Oklahoma. I don't know if those are legendary or something. We need more details there, Neil.
The evidence gets flooded away.
Oh, God, more dad jokes. Okay, let's move on. Speaking of dad jokes, Garrison Keillor. He's the host of Public Radio's A Prairie Home Companion. He recently weighed in a big way on the Braves' move to Cobb County. Mm. Keillor performed a show in Atlanta for the last time, and in typical Prairie Home fashion, he included a bit where he criticized the Braves' decision to leave Turner Field.
What I called you about, Mr. Right. Ward, this season is the team's last season in its beloved Turner Field.
No.
One of the most beautiful ballparks in the history of baseball.
Uh-huh.
Next spring, unless the good people of Georgia come to their senses, the team will leave its home in the great American city of Atlanta, a city with history,
right.
culture,
yeah.
and go to an ugly new field in the midst of miles of shopping malls and office parks.
Okay, so in addition to that, Deadspin reports that Cobb County will have to raise taxes in order to pay for public parks, just as that $400 million new stadium nears completion. So I'm wondering how we're all feeling about the Braves. Oh boy, Sam's already giving me the stink eye.
You need to take a picture of that and post it so I can see what that looks like from Savannah.
We just toured Turner Field with my son's class a few weeks ago. And I'm looking around wondering, why in the world do we need to replace this ball field? There's nothing wrong with it. It's, you know, this whole competition where we want to get the All-Star Game, or with Georgia Dome, we want to get the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
And you think that the Superdome hosts more Super Bowls than the Georgia Dome, and it was older than the Georgia Dome is now when Georgia Dome was built.
You're talking about the Superdome in New
Orleans.
Right,
the Superdome in New Orleans. It's not a matter of just get a brand new stadium and we get this event that will never in any way pay for the money and the time and the trouble it took to build a new stadium.
And, you know, Boston's playing in Fenway Park that they've been playing in since the early 1900s.
Right. And those are great experiences at Fenway Park and Finley. But, you know, this whole deal that Liberty Media had to abandon a historic Olympic stadium, you know, it stinks to high heaven. And Commissioner Lee is in real trouble in Cobb County as a result of this. And the folks who live around there, I think we got somebody here who does, are going to be dealing with a lot more traffic. And I think the city's going to have just fine redevelopment, but in that area. But it's bad for, you know, a lot of reasons, and particularly for Cobb County, it seems to me.
Well, I'm a resident of Cobb County, and I'm dreading it. I live like 2 miles away from the new stadium.
Oof. And traffic,
you know,
is supposed to be
traffic
bad.
Is bad already, and we have no idea what it's going to be like once they move in there. And then talking about taxes, increasing taxes, come on, give me a break. And I really would hate to leave the old stadium because it has such historic moments such as Muhammad Ali lighting the flame for the Olympics, etc.
Well, let me read you a tweet from a listener, T-Barf. He tweets, I found that Prairie Home segment to be very unfunny. Not sure why lefties have politicized the Braves move. That said, it was a bonehead move.
I take offense to that because I'm about as far from a lefty as you're going to find.
No, but he did seem like, I mean, I felt like when I heard that, you know, what you Yankees coming down here telling us about how all this stuff and you know, kind of insulting Cobb County in the process.
Don't like to do what we're told. All right. So
let me
just say, though. Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I was just going to say that if you're going to invest additional taxes in something, one of the best returns on your investment are public parks. So,
and not stadiums.
There you go. All right. And we got this tweet from Robbie Medwed who says, said it before, I'll say it again. The Braves are dead to me. Dead. Okay. We only have a couple minutes left, and we'll see if we can get through this last topic in that time. During a wrestling match this month in Catoosa County, Georgia, a woman in the audience brought a gun to the fight and pointed it at one of the fighters, the quote-unquote bad guy of the wrestling match. According to the Times Free Press, Patricia Ann Crow was charged with aggravated assault and reckless conduct. And the question is, should we add wrestling matches to the list of places where people should not be allowed to carry a gun?
No, it should be a place where everybody is required to carry a gun because, see, if the bad guy wrestler had a gun, then she wouldn't have ever drawn her gun.
Funny. See? Yeah, come on now. You've been, what did you call it, Sam? It's a
wrestling. It's different than wrestling, which is like what they do in the college and the Olympics.
Yes.
This is wrestling, which is a little bit of a different creature. And if you've never been to a local wrestling event, and seen, you need to go, everybody go once, you know, you'll pay you a couple dollars to get in, you don't have to ever go again, but watch with the grannies on the front row swinging at the bad guys with their canes that they don't need a gun to get rowdy up in a wrestling match in North Georgia.
So you're for banning guns there?
I actually think, okay, as far as the guns, let's leave that up to the person that owns or operates the venue, but grannies are dangerous.
She looks dangerous from the picture.
Enough is enough of gun violence. We need to stop that.
Wrestling matches or anywhere else?
Anywhere else.
Amy?
Yes. I agree with the last statement completely. I think we've also bordered on this weirdness where it's, I don't know if it's reality TV or what's done it, but where we assume that someone's portraying a character is really that character.
Oh, yes.
You know what I mean?
Like,
remember, you were talking about critical thinking?
Yes, the whole concept of critical thinking is kind of like blown out the door, and that gives me more concern than anything.
Okay, so Amy Condon is concerned that people think that fantasy is reality. Sumaya just wants us to get better gun control, and Sam Burnham wants to ban grannies, apparently. We are out of time.
All the brave old ladies from Pasadena have to go somewhere.
We're out of time in the break room. I want to say thank you to all my guests. Amy Condon is an editor with Savannah Magazine. Sumaya Khalifa oversees, you're welcome, as the Islamic Speakers Bureau of Atlanta. Sam Burnham runs the blog All the Biscuits in Georgia, and Ken Edelstein blogs about the environment. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
That's our show for today. But as always, we love to hear from you. And we'd especially love to hear your answer on that question. Should we allow guns at wrestling matches? I'm not saying that right. Call us at 404-500-9457. We're also on Twitter at OST Talk and on Facebook. For today and the week, that's on Second Thought from GPB News. I'm Celeste Headley. Have a great day. Still hot, knock your shell off. My money stacked fat, plus I can't turn the swell off. The franchise doing big business.